It's 8-10 in sports. After sweeping Detroit in the first round of the playoffs, the Bucks received a rude awakening yesterday, losing in the first game of the second round to the Celtics, 112-90. In baseball, the Brewers took 2 out of 3 from the Mets, losing yesterday 5-2. Christian Yelich was pulled in the fifth of the back problem. The reigning National League MVP already has 14 homers this year, tying a record for the most by a player through the first full month of a season. Elsewhere, the Cubs outlasted of the Diamondbacks 6-5-14. The White Sox beat the Tigers 4-1. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service. Periods of showers today, mainly before mid-afternoon, a high of 47. East winds at 10 to 15. Should be dry tonight, a low of 38. Then another round of showers and storms for tomorrow. Not much change in temperature. Expanded forecast for Wednesday through Friday. Shower chances Wednesday and Thursday. Dry Friday. Wednesday's high 61. Thursday's high 55. Not much change for Friday. Right now, a temperature reading of 41 in Kenosha with rain. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The morning show with Greg Berg is coming up. Support for WGTD comes from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, offering an online master's degree in healthcare administration. Learn the skills necessary to be a leader in the complicated world of healthcare. Details at uwp.edu. And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am pleased and deeply honored to be sitting opposite Cameron Swallow this morning, and that will be a name familiar, I'm sure, to many of you. Cameron Swallow is the wife of Dr. John Swallow, the president of Carthage College, and I'm not sure if Cameron Swallow enjoys being called the First Lady of Carthage, but that is what she is called, whether or not she's comfortable with it or not. But she is certainly, in many respects, made a point of doing a lot of deeply meaningful things when it comes to serving the Carthage community and also the wider community and seeking in many ways to build deeper connections between Carthage and the outer community. And we're going to be talking about a number of those efforts today and especially talk about one that is something rather new to me, an organization called Better Angels that exists actually on a nationwide scale and seeks to bring people together who are across the political aisle from one another and are symptomatic of the deep polarization that we see in American culture right now. And Better Angels seeks to draw people across the aisle into more effective and meaningful dialogue, and one hopes into deeper understanding of each other and their perspectives. And we're going to be finding out from Cameron Swallow why this is important work for her, and we're specifically talking about Better Angels today because of a workshop that is coming up this coming Saturday morning on the north side of Kenosha. But we will talk about a lot beyond that. Cameron Swallow, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg. It's nice to be here.
So glad that you can be here. I've had the pleasure of speaking with your husband on a couple of different occasions on the morning show, but have been looking forward now to this very, very much. Ahead of us talking about all that I just outlined, I think it would be nice for those listening who maybe don't know too much about you to know a little bit about where you come from originally and anything you would think is important for them to know about Cameron Swallow.
Well, originally, I guess I was born in Huntsville, Alabama, because my parents were working in the space program in the 1960s in Huntsville, Alabama. They are both from Mississippi, so there was a minor transplant to Huntsville and then to rural Tennessee. They moved just over the state line for a more rural upbringing for my brother and me. Before the larger transplant to come here to Kenosha and have my first Midwest experience, which began on the 4th of August, 2017.
Growing up, what was most important to you? And as you, for instance, went off to college, what kinds of things were you exploring at that point in your life?
Oh, I've always been very interested in literature and music. I never got into the other extracurriculars like sports. That was never part of my world. Although, you know, I sort of speak that language because I was surrounded by it growing up. So it's kind of a way of being bilingual, I guess, to understand the sports activity language. But I was always on the music and drama and literature side of interaction.
Yeah. At what point did you meet your husband, John Swallow?
We met my freshman year in college. He was a sophomore. I was a freshman. We were both in the university choir, and that was enough of a beginning, even before we realized we were both double majors in mathematics and English literature.
There you go. I can't think of a better place to meet than choir. And where was this? Where were you in school together?
At a four-year liberal arts Episcopal school in the wilderness of Tennessee called Sewanee, the University of the South at Sewanee.
And that is to where your husband eventually returned. I don't remember his position there. But
he was provost there for the last 6 years before we moved to Kenosha.
Very good. So that was indeed a big move and your first foray into the Midwest. Tell us a little bit about that opportunity and how you were sort of anticipating it and what it's turned out to be.
Oh, well, it's turned out to be a grand and glorious adventure. Snow on April 27th, notwithstanding. We're thrilled to be in Kenosha, thrilled to be at Carthage, thrilled to have the lake in our backyard. And so much is possible. It may amuse some of your listeners to hear that this is the largest place we've ever lived. This is the greatest population density we've ever experienced.
So this is the big city for the Swallows.
Yes.
As your husband assumed the reins of Carthage as president, you, of course, were becoming First Lady of Carthage, so to speak, although I don't think that's ever written in stone as any kind of official position.
Well, nothing is written. It is the least well-defined, high-profile position in the whole world.
So as you move to Kenosha with your husband, what did you think about in terms of what you wanted to be and or accomplish or represent as First Lady of Carthage? What have you gone out of your way to do?
Well, my background and experience is all in the secondary school classroom. So I knew that, you know, teaching is a relentless and unforgiving schedule. So I knew that I was not going to come here and dive right into a teaching job before I figured out what my role at Carthage was supposed to be. And I'm I'm glad that I made that decision. That was the right decision. But it is difficult to lose your adult professional identity and not have a clear replacement for it lined up and ready to go. And so being a presidential spouse, which is the new term for first lady.
Ah, presidential spouse. I like
being,
that.
Being a presidential spouse has as many variations as there are presidencies. And that's a blessing and a burden, right? It's you have a lot of latitude and a lot of liberty to create your own role, but then you've got a lot of responsibility and unanswered questions about how to create your own role. Hmm. So the sort of internal guidance that I had to for what I wanted my role to be is fostering all the connections possible between the college and the community and other connections within the community, whether it had anything to do with the college or not, if I, you know, were in a position to create additional connections. Crossing boundaries, building bridges has always been a focus and an area of interest for me.
I'm just curious if your predecessor, whose husband was the predecessor of John Swallow, I'm talking about Greg Woodward and his wife Penny Woodward. I'm wondering if she ever had the opportunity, or if you ever had the opportunity to ask her any questions about Carthage and about the very things you've been describing.
We only met once, really, and she was very gracious and welcoming, but I. As I said, every presidential spouse experience and role is different, and you have to make it up for yourself.
Have to do what's right for you. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Cameron Swallow, and we're talking now about a number of different things that she is involved with in the community towards the laudable goal of building richer and more meaningful connections between Carthage and the outer communities of both Kenosha and Racine. And one of the things we want to be sure to talk about is an organization called Better Angels. And this was honestly an organization I had not heard very much at all about until I read a news release about an event that they had coming up that Cameron Swallow was going to be part of. And I did some digging and was very impressed with what I found. So first of all, I wonder if you could say a word about what initially drew you to this organization called Better Angels. I mean, maybe a little bit about how you first heard about them and why the mission of Better Angels spoke so directly to you.
In early 2018, I believe, a distant friend on Facebook reposted an advertisement for a Better Angels event. And it caught my eye because I am from a politically divided family. In the language of Better Angels, we talk about blues and reds, and that is supposed to catch all the categories and subcategories of, you know, not every conservative is a straight Republican ticket voter. Not every Democrat would consider themselves a progressive or a, you know, people divide themselves by issues. But if you offer two colors, then you pretty much catch all the categories. And so in that language of blues and reds, I'm a blue raised by reds, and that's another example of a sort of bilingual identity, right? I have an understanding of both sides of this political debate before it got as contentious and hostile as it is now. And I believe that if we could see each other as human beings, instead of monsters, that more good work and more progress could be possible. And that is what Better Angels promises. So I clicked on that link because it caught my eye a little over a year ago. And the more I researched, the more I realized there is room for expansion. And in Wisconsin, there have not been any active groups or workshops yet. So I thought, let's have one.
Mm. I wonder if you could tell our listeners a little bit about the humble beginnings of Better Angels. My understanding is that it really started with a relatively small handful of people who gathered together, a few reds, a few blues, and has gone from there. What can you tell our listeners about that?
Yes, it's like a top 40 band that started in the garage. This is a living room start with individuals who were inspired to take action after the 2016 election. One man, David Blankenhorn, called another man, David Lapp, in Ohio, and said, hey, let's get 10 Clinton supporters and 10 Trump supporters together in a room and have a conversation and see where we can go from here. And they did that, and the surprise of the evening was how much everybody felt connected and relieved and hopeful about the future. And they wanted to share that feeling, that sense of possibility that they had experienced there. And they said, we've got to spread this this model. The country needs this.
In the way it is described on their website, I remember one of the things they said is that they got together and they found that they liked each other. It's just kind of funny to think about saying that as though it's a remarkable thing, and yet it was a remarkable thing, and I'm sure a surprise and a relief to them, mm-hmm. Given sort of what tends to be the public face mm-hmm. in this polarized time in which we live, in which we really do, sometimes even without intending to, really demonize those who are on the other side of the fence from where we are. So describe, in a sense, what occurs at various Better Angels events. I mean, mm-hmm. how do they seek to, in a sense, replicate that kind of magical first experience of coming together that happened under such humble circumstances in Ohio?
Well, their signature event is called a Red-Blue Workshop, and it is very carefully balanced and calibrated to have exactly 5 to 7 reds and exactly the same number of blues. And it's very orchestrated and scripted and moderated, and so that it becomes a protected space for the discussion of important issues without things getting contentious or personal, because the moderator is there for checking and rephrasing and reframing and letting some of the time be given to reds discussions with reds and blues watching, and then vice versa, and then some of the time being spent in separate rooms and coming back and sharing what they did separately, and then some of the time being in red-blue pairs and having individual conversations. That kind of event we are working up to having. The less structured, less strictly balanced kind of event is called a skills workshop, and that's what's scheduled for this Saturday at the Northside Library. At a skills workshop, the moderator sets up several simulated encounters for difficult conversations where people practice non-incendiary language. They practice having difficult conversations, but they practice in same color pairs. and pretend, you know, they take the role like a like an old high school debating exercise where you take a role that is not yours, and but you make those arguments in good faith and give everybody practice in how to answer them and have a good conversation without somebody having to stalk out of the room.
Wow. And so this is the event that's going to happen on Saturday. And so this is, in a sense, designed to help us communicate our ideas in a way that will not is going to be at least less likely to arouse the anger of someone who does not see the world the way we do. Is that an oversimplification, or is that essentially what happens?
That is essentially what happens. A good subtitle might be How to Disagree Without Being Disagreeable.
Ah. So what is your role going to be at this?
I'm the moderator. Ah. I've gone through the official Better Angels training modules for being a moderator, and I am a high school teacher, and so the skill set sort of matches. And as we put together the more formal red-blue workshop that we hope to start in the fall, I will have a red moderator on the team also, and we will have everything balanced and coordinated. Mm-hmm.
I hope this isn't too personal a question. I should have asked you this before we went on the air, if it's okay to ask this. And if it's not, if you'd just rather not go here, that's perfectly fine. But you've already mentioned the fact that you come from a politically divided family, that I think you called yourself a blue raised by reds. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, in your own family, I suspect that you have already learned a few lessons, maybe the hard way, in terms of what topics to avoid, or when a topic cannot be avoided, how to talk about things. Do you feel like you bring to this task on Saturday some real-world experience from your own family and some of the difficulties that I suspect you've encountered over this?
Well, there's a yes and a no to that, Greg. Yes, I believe I naturally have a sense that maybe someone who's been raised in a blue enclave all their lives might be lacking a sense that people in red America are good and thoughtful and intelligent and capable of nuance in a way that I think blue America tends to paint broad brush strokes and say is impossible. And that's, I have that sense by personal experience, by accident of birth.
Right. You know.
But there are, you know, it's been a painful process to watch since 2016, particularly the number of safe subjects for public family discussion dwindle clearly and regularly until, you know, you're left with sports and recipes and the weather, so that you avoid present difficulty or causing pain to people that you love. Mm. And part of my attraction to Better Angels is that maybe by engaging this in a larger sense, in a larger society, it will help spark some conversations in good and healthy ways within my own family.
Interesting. So it's, in some ways, it's almost, I mean, it is, I see what you mean, yes and no. You bring some very rich personal experience, and yet probably equally you hope that what you learn and experience from being part of Better Angels will help you when it comes time to, in a sense, return to your own family. Mm-hmm. And I should think part of what is frustrating for you would be that I'm sure in the past you have enjoyed rich dialogue with your family on weighty matters of importance. And in a sense, to feel like now you have to retreat to the safe territory of recipes and so on, mm-hmm. that just feels like, in a sense, these encounters are not as rich and open as mm-hmm. perhaps they once were. Mm-hmm. And you probably want that to happen again.
Right. And, you know, if that's happening in my intelligent and balanced and loving family, it's got to be happening all over this country. And all the things we are missing out on for no good reason, just because public forces like media portrayals are demonizing the other side for us.
Right. Yeah. There's a whole lot of oversimplification that goes on that is very frustrating. You know, one of the things that I have heard said repeatedly in a podcast that I listen to fairly regularly called Pod Save America, which is decidedly progressive, by the way. But one of the points that they make that speaks to the mission of Better Angels is that it is their belief that, in some respects at least, the mainstream of America is not nearly as polarized as one might glean from headlines, from media portrayals, from Twitter. And it is their contention, which they make repeatedly, that if you spend too much time on Twitter and reading tweets, you are seeing the most polarized point of American society, and that a whole lot of other people actually aren't at those extreme points, that many of the rest of us, I would count myself among them, are much more in the middle, and that in a sense we should not allow the Twitterverse or whatever they call it to speak for us, and also should not allow that level of discourse to kind of be the guiding force in terms of how we see one another. I find that really insightful and valuable.
I see it this way, that great number of people somewhere in the middle on this spectrum, they're getting the message that to be a good conservative, you need to become a more extreme conservative. Or to be a good liberal, you need to become a more extreme liberal.
And more unyielding. I mean, that would be one element of that extreme that you're talking about.
Yeah, I call it the Purity Olympics. The Purity Olympics is a very, very dangerous force. And if we could have another kind of inspiration that being a good citizen does not involve over-purification. Being a good citizen, becoming a better citizen, involves engagement. You know, our choices seem to be either becoming more and more extreme or giving up and hiding from the political world altogether. And I want a third choice. I want a way to engage and recognize humanity on all the sides and get somewhere instead of just hiding behind our barricades and getting ready for war.
Well said. What was it like to go through the training that you underwent with Better Angels, that training which in a sense equips you, certifies you to be able to lead this skills workshop that's coming up on Saturday morning? What was that training like, at least in general, and what did it feel like to be part of something like that?
The training is all online. I'm looking forward to an opportunity in June to actually meet in person with some other people who are moderators. But the nuts and bolts of it felt very familiar to a classroom teacher, as I am. It felt like, oh, I'm learning how to prepare for this certain kind of workshop, this kind of class. This feels like my world, my vocabulary. I already know the forms of how to do this. This is just new material.
Right. Well, it's very, very intriguing. So we want to make sure that people understand that this Better Angels Skills Workshop is coming up this Saturday, the 4th of May, at the Northside Library, beginning at 9:30 in the morning and lasting until 12 noon. And this is not a drop-in and drop-out thing. I mean, you come at the beginning, you're there to the end. Is it a fairly strictly structured event with different things occurring through the course of it?
Yes. I will have a buzzer. I will have a timer and a buzzer.
And you're not afraid to use it.
But I'm afraid, Greg, we're implying that people can just show up at 9:30 on Saturday, and that they can't. We have 50 seats available, and there is more space available, but we would hate to have to turn anybody away, and we are limited to 50. So please go and register for the program, and the website of Better Angels is better-angels.org, and then if you click on the Find Event tab and put in Kenosha and Skills Workshop in the filters, then you can click the sign up, and it is it's free. We just need to have the record and the registration to make sure we don't go over our 50 people.
Important. So that RSVP is required. And although this is occurring at the Northside Kenosha Library, I assume it's not restricted to Kenoshans. Somebody from Racine Salem or wherever is welcome.
We are seeking, just for our local effort, we are seeking a balance not only between reds and blues, but also between Kenoshans and Racinians.
Very good. This is an opportunity that I hope people will really seriously consider. So again, it is this Saturday, the 4th of May, 9:30 to 12 noon at Kenosha's Northside Library. You do need to go to the website of Better Angels in order to register for this free event. And again, that website address is better-angels.org. And at that website, you can also read much more about Better Angels, about the creation of the organization, and what they are all about. And there is also a blog that is connected to, or a podcast that is connected to Better Angels that is very much worth exploring as well. For those of you just joining us, my guest on today's morning show is Cameron Swallow, and she is going to be the moderator for this Better Angels Skills Workshop that is coming up on Saturday morning. But Cameron Swallow has been involved in a number of other activities related to connection building and so on. And one that I want to be sure that you have a chance to mention, since it's closely related to the mission of Better Angels, is something involving the Coalition for Dismantling Racism. Tell our listeners about this and your own involvement in it.
Well, my own involvement is with the Kindness Committee so far. I have yet to attend my first official Coalition for Dismantling Racism event, but I am inspired by their mission and by their grassroots, ultra-local history. They're a little over 20 years old, and they were started not by any national movement, but by a group of concerned citizens in Kenosha, and they are still going strong and working in this community to bring an increased measure of justice to our society.
Very good. And you mentioned something about the fact that they orchestrate or foster or help make possible certain important conversations around the topic of racism.
Yes, they call them the Courageous Conversations, and the hope of sponsoring such conversations is to bring to crossing points paths that would not normally cross. And I'd like to be instrumental in that effort, because I think that's where the interest happens, is when groups of people or simply individuals that would not normally cross paths end up sharing space and time and discovering common ground that they would not have imagined they had.
Mm-hmm. I know that something that you are extremely excited about is something that involves the Library of Congress and an extensive oral history project that they have that Carthage is going to end up being a very exciting part of. First of all, tell our listeners about kind of the accidental encounter that, in a sense, opened the door for Carthage to be part of something so extensive and exciting.
Yeah, speaking about paths that you don't expect to normally cross, I was in D.C. for a 48-hour visit when my husband was doing his Meet the President series of events with different alumni chapters in different areas of the country. So I was scheduled to have to attend an evening function with Carthage alumni in the D.C. area. But until that evening function, I had a free day in Washington, D.C. And I spent a larger part of it than I would have expected in the Library of Congress because I just kept finding more interesting things to read. And I didn't have any other appointments. And I just, you know, dove deep into reading every plaque, analyzing every portrait, and learning a lot about history from that vantage point. And I got to go into the back halls where StoryCorps is done and the oral history projects are found. I didn't have a badge, but they weren't busy, and you know, if you don't ask, you'll never receive. So I asked if they had time to show me around. I'm interested in folk music and the oral tradition transmission of songs through the generations. So that's where I started, and I talked to another musician who was there and learned about folk music in the Midwest. And then I started asking because, you know, as I said at the beginning of this program, I was freshly transplanted into a new region of the country and without my sustaining professional identity of being a high school teacher. I said, What can I find to do that fills that sense of identity? Because, you know, when you're a teacher in the public schools, Greg, you don't have to ask yourself if what you're doing is important. You don't have to make up stories to reassure yourself about the meaning of your work, you know? And suddenly I was in this position of, what am I doing and is it important and is there meaning in my life and et cetera? And so I was looking for a larger project, a project that could grow with whatever my role was developing to be. And I asked the Library of Congress oral historian if there was a national project that we in Kenosha could be part of. And he said, well, sure, let me show you the, what do they call it? The Occupational Folk Life Archive. This is the spiritual successor to the America Works program, the Studs Terkel oral interviews with different working Americans exploring different fields. And he said, and I'm sure this will come as a shock to all your listeners, that some of the female-dominated fields got neglected.
What a surprise. What a shock.
So in those early days of collecting career-based working stories, they neglected the female-dominated fields, and they are trying to make up for that neglect and fill some of those gaps. And so there's a big education project and a big nursing project. And she said, Madison's been working on an education project. How would you like to be working on a nursing project? And I thought, that sounds great. Everybody knows a nurse. Everybody wants to celebrate nurses. And I was thinking about how great it would be to have school children, school projects, bring in interviews with nurses, write biographies of nurses, work on creative nonfiction pieces with their state-appointed writing skills, writing about nurses. So I was already thinking about the K-12 applications of this. But, of course, the official historical interviews needed to be done in official ways. And I took that idea and that project back to the history department at Carthage College and said, the Library of Congress has solicited these this oral history project interviews, and the history department said, hey, we're revamping our major right now, and in our methods course, we wanted to have an oral history project, and looks like that our need and your idea are going to dovetail nicely. And so right this minute, the second semester of that project of interviewing local nurses with our history students is underway.
Wow. That is such a fantastic idea. And I think in a lot of different ways. I mean, first of all, I think you're right that just about all of us have known a nurse and or been nursed by a nurse. But that does not mean we begin to understand the arduous responsibilities that the typical nurse undertakes and experiences. And beyond that, most of us also have little or no understanding of how drastically the work of nurses has changed over the last several decades in particular. So when you start talking to nurses who were nurses 30, 40, 50 years ago, you are talking about remarkable stories that might otherwise so easily be lost. So this is exciting. So where are we in the in this project at the moment?
The second set of Carthage history major students are doing their interviews. And I have a meeting later this week with administrators in the Racine Unified School District about putting this project into their academies. I'm going to get some of this language wrong, but they have career interest tracks in their high school programs at their three high schools. And the ones that are in the pre-health classes, we're going to look at ways to ally themselves with this project, not with the official oral history recorded interviews the way the college students are doing, but with related projects that unifies science and the humanities around nursing.
Very exciting. So again, this oral history project under the auspices of the Library of Congress, a wonderful thing to explore and lift up. One other thing that you have been very involved in that I know has given you tremendous joy has been your involvement in something in downtown Kenosha called the Kenosha Creative Space. So I suspect a lot of our listeners know exactly what I'm talking about, but especially listeners not in Kenosha might not. And there are certainly some Kenoshans who have not managed to find their way yet to the creative space. Explain what it is and also some of the joy that you've experienced in being part of Kenosha's creative space.
Well, physically, the Kenosha Creative Space is a storefront location on 57th Street in downtown Kenosha. But that's just the newest incarnation of it. I think as an organization, it's much older. And if you catch Francisco Loyola sometime at the space, he will tell you the whole history of how they've tried to have an organization around the arts building community in Kenosha for a long time. And at the space, there's an art gallery, there's a coalition of nonprofits all finding strength in being together and united in one place. And there are performances all the time. Carthage is working on a second Saturday program with the space and has been sending music and theater performers from their student body every second Saturday for this academic year. And the next one to find is May 11th. And we are working on making that second Saturday into a time for younger performers to come and hear the Carthage students perform and then have sort of a young people's open mic or talent sharing event, less becoming less formal. I call it practice performance. To have a less formal venue than solo and ensemble competition, but try out something new, play with a partner from another school, work on your second instrument, et cetera, and perform for a kind and supportive audience of your peers at the Kenosha Creative Space.
I like that quite a lot. And you and I had the pleasure of sharing the bill at a Kenosha Creative Space event a few months ago where I sang some Broadway tunes and you sang in a group that has, in a sense, meant a lot to you for a long time. Tell others about the kind of singing that you enjoy doing in those kind of venues.
Well, I was in a bluegrass band for about 10 years in Davidson, North Carolina, and I've always been interested in folk music, as the Library of Congress oral historians can attest. And here I've got a brand new band called Flat Creek Highway, and we're playing bluegrass gigs around northern Illinois and southern Wisconsin, and having a really, really great time.
Fabulous. There's nothing more fun than bluegrass, and fun to sing and fun to experience from the listener's vantage point. Well, before we go, we should circle back to Better Angels. We want to reiterate this really important event that is coming up, a skills workshop Saturday morning at the Northside Kenosha Library. And again, it's a free event, but RSVPs are required. You need to register in order to be part of this this event. I think a closing thought that might be important is, for the sake of somebody who feels like they might be afraid that the business of Better Angels is to sort of cause you to retreat from positions that you think are important or lines that you simply feel like you cannot cross when it comes to certain principles or certain values or whatever, it's probably important to understand that one can certainly be a person of conviction and yet benefit tremendously from what Better Angels has to offer. What would you say to somebody who might have a concern like that?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Greg, because yes, that certainly in our culture and climate, that needs to be underlined. Better Angels does not aim to persuade, convince, convert anyone from positions that they hold. It's just a matter of how you can see the humanity of other people who hold their positions. And you listen for understanding, not for persuasion.
That's a very important perspective and one that we need in our current climate so desperately. So this Better Angels Skills Workshop is going to be occurring this Saturday morning, 9:30 to 12 at the Northside Kenosha Library. And you can go to the website of Better Angels, first of all, for more information and more specifically to register if you would like to be one of the people who participates in Saturday morning's workshop. So you go to their website, which is better-angels.org, and you will find everything there that you need in order to be a part of Saturday's event. Cameron Swallow, I'm so glad that we had this opportunity to speak about a lot of different, very important things, and I'm grateful that you are in Kenosha and at Carthage and making such a rich difference in our community, and I hope that we will be able to have other conversations in the future on the morning show, and thank you for making this part of your very busy schedule.
Thank you for having me, Greg.
Cameron Swallow, our guest on the morning show today here on WGTD. Tomorrow on the morning show, Penny Farmer, the author of a very powerful memoir called Dead in the Water. It chronicles the tireless efforts of her and her family to bring to justice her brother's murderer, a murderer who was on the run for almost 40 years. And it's an extraordinary story, which we will explore on tomorrow's morning show. On Wednesday, we'll be talking Shakespeare with Brian Gill, who is from the theater department at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. They are opening a production this weekend of a Shakespeare play that is quite fascinating, but not all that often done, called Love's Labor's Lost. We will explore the beauty of this particular play with Brian Gill on Wednesday's morning show. We remind you that the morning show is archived on our website, WGTD.org. We also remind you that the morning show is available as a podcast, and you can subscribe to the morning show podcast via Google Podcast or Apple Podcast or Spotify. Just make sure that you look for it under its full podcast title, The Morning Show, hosted by Greg Berg. And you will find podcast episodes available not only Monday through Friday, but also archival